Jerusalem. How I love for
Shabbat Shalom. And for those of you that sent whatever it was, birthday wishes, greetings, prayers, whatever. What do we do these days? I don't know. Thank you so much. Yes, I have officially entered into the Medicare eligible range now. So, but I, as my daughter said, I refuse to grow up. So, for those of you that are that share with me that Medicare eligible, that's only in physical sense, and mentally, no, I'm not going there. But yeah, celebrated birthday yesterday, which was of course coming up on Passover. And that's why I'm doing something a little different this week. I had to, with Passover this week, I had to change recordings to Tuesday. So yesterday I decided that, I just thought I'm not going to do a recording today. Not just because it's my birthday and I want to take the day off, but because it was coming up on Passover. And it was then evident last night. Why? Because I have something, I think, very special to share with you today. Coming up into this Passover season. A couple things regarding Passover. Remember, that Passover is not just a moment in time, but Passover is a season. And it is said that we have not truly entered into Passover and observed Passover until we have observed Shavuot. And those two, those are two of the three biblical festivals that were, Passover, Shavuot, Sukkot, Feast of Tabernacles, that's the three big ones. But so this is all about our redemption. And then out of that redemption, we really are not truly redeemed until we come to the place of the message of Shavuot, Pentecost, and we receive their instructions into our lives that are going to give us a new way of life and therefore keep us from going back into bondage. It's been exciting to watch on Facebook the last few days, and of course this morning also, as the posts have come out from people all over the country, around the world, that are celebrating Passover. I remember the days in which it was like, you know, one or two people here and there, and to just see all the Passover services that are going on is amazing. I'll get to that in just a moment. Before I do, though, I will be, Bezrat Hashem, God willing, I'll be in Wilkesboro, North Carolina this Shabbat, working with Exodus Road Band, my brother Rico Cortez. I can't remember his name. He has been working with the Red Heifers in Israel. Looking forward to meeting him and spending some time. And my son Daniel is going to be up there just for the afternoon evening on Shabbat. And so if you're anywhere around Wilkesboro, North Carolina, please come and see us. Rico, I will be speaking to the adults one time. I'm going to be doing more of the young adult youth sessions, because I'm not old enough actually to be in the adult section. I'm still over in my mind, guys. At Thanksgiving, I'm still sitting at the children's table, okay? And I'm very happy at the children's table, because that's where all the fun is. So if you're anywhere around there, if you need information on that, please send me an email. I'll be glad to send that to you. The Passovers, seeing the pictures was wonderful. I figured out last night, I don't know how, a miracle happened at our Passover last night, in that there wasn't a single picture taken. I don't know how we possibly got through the whole evening, but nobody took out a phone, nobody took out a camera, and nobody took a picture that I know of, and I'm okay with that. But there was pictures all over Facebook of some that were large, some that were small, some that were elaborate, some that were simple, anywhere between all of that. But just to see the number of people, I know folks that have been have had churches reach out to them in the last few months that knew that they observed Passover, and churches that have been saying, you know, we're kind of rethinking some things. Of, how do you get 3 days and three nights between Friday and Sunday? Was he really resurrected on Sunday? Is there some issues here? And so there's a lot of people that are waking up to this amazing revelation. In fact, I think it's wonderful this year in that the days of the week actually correspond to the same time that it was in 2,000 years ago at the time of Yeshua. That the, and this would correspond, I guess, maybe to the same as it was in the days of Egypt. I don't know, but you know, last Shabbat was the 10th of Nisan, a Torah congregation. It was on that day that they brought the lamb into the house to be examined. In as it was in the days of Yeshua, it was on Shabbat. Interesting enough, Messiah being our Shabbat, our rest in redemption. He was brought into Jerusalem, and it was Shabbat that he began to reveal himself. It was in those days that he was questioned. It would have been on Wednesday night that he was placed upon an execution stake. And these days that we're into right now, between now and the end of Shabbat, he was not. Well, Scripture never says that he was raised on Sunday morning. It says the women went to the tomb on Sunday morning. Why? Because, you know, it was Shabbat, for one thing, and you wouldn't have traveled. And you wouldn't have traveled at night. They would not have been able to travel to the tomb until after Shabbat was over, and it's kind of dark out. And so they would have waited till the next morning. So this year, everything lines up on our Gregorian calendar, the best of our knowledge, the same as it was in the days of Yeshua. And I wonder if maybe it was the same in the days of Egypt. I don't know. A new thought for me this year is, it's funny. You know, I've been celebrating Passover since 1997. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. And this is just this video this week is just me kind of sharing some personal things, and I hope it speaks to you. But I wondered this year. I've taught for a number of years that the first Passover was in the garden, and so when the Almighty slayed the animal, that was a day that would later be referred to as Passover. So I wonder if he came to them on the 10th of Nisan in the garden and began to question them and to talk to them about, we get this idea that things just happen, you know, like one after another, that this moment, and now the story is done. But did this happen over time? Did he come to them on the 10th of Nisan, begin to explain to them what they had done? Was the lamb slain, or the animal slain, on the evening of the 14th? Did he take those skins, and it take 50 days during what we would see as the count of the Omer, until the days of Shavuot, and we see of in Bereshit, Genesis chapter 3, when he brought the skins, he brought life into the skins and gave it to them. Is this all the biblical pattern that happens over and over and over again? As Hulis Allwine says, it's not that prophecy happens. We shouldn't be saying, is prophecy happening? But how many times has this now been fulfilled? How many times are we on the time in which we're seeing it fulfilled again and again and again, until there will be one day a final fulfillment of these prophecies? It's that cycle that we go through. And so to see this happen and other new people coming into this has been amazing. I was remembering back to, it was 1997. I was pastoring this Southern Baptist Charismatic Pentecostal with very slightly messianic leanings. I had not even been to Israel yet. I don't know if I knew what the word Torah meant. I sure couldn't have explained it to anybody. I was probably still teaching a little replacement theology in those days, and was invited to go to a Passover Seder in Tallahassee, Florida. So myself, Kathy, and a number of us from the church there, we went to Tallahassee, and it was quite an event. You got to understand that where I was pastoring in in Spring Creek, it's a long ways from the city, and it's a long ways from city folks. And so we walked into this banquet room, and you talk about elegant. It was elegant to the max. I'm totally uncomfortable in places like that. It was one of those that there's probably 200 or 300 people there, and they've got these round tables, which they, something about that, they have a table that seats 6, and you've got to put 8 to 10 at the table. And so it's like this claustrophobic thing that I don't do real well. And then there's 5 or 6 forks at the plates, at the place setting. I'm a very simple person. I only need one fork. It doesn't matter if it's salad, appetizer, the green beans, or dessert. I only use one kind of fork. It just fits real well. And I'm having to look around and go, okay, which fork am I supposed to use for this? And it's really uncomfortable. It's one of these very long seders that took hours and hours. And I'm looking around like, okay, I know there's something here, but I think that there's something that I'm kind of missing. But that did pique an interest to look at this a little bit more. And I remember going to another seder the next year, and then eventually would begin to lead the seders. And over the last however many years it's been, from 97 till now, I've probably attended over 20 seders, well over 20 seders. I've led most of them. And as I look back at the seders that we've done, I was in Belgium in 2005, led a seder. It was that we knew of. It was the first time that there had been a group of people that were just new to, in those days, Hebrew roots, Messianic, Torah was very new to the area of Antwerpen. There was congregation springing up, but there were few and far between. And so I was able to lead. There's over 100 people that came together in Antwerpen that night. And, we led what we think was the first community Passover that was based on the person of Messiah. We did a Passover in Oklahoma that I dressed up as Moses. That was a blast. Did one down in Clayton, Georgia, that did the same thing. That's always, you know, always fun. We've done small Passovers. One year it was just Kathy and I. We've done large Passovers, each one of them having great meaning. But this year's Passover was, let me tell you, just totally different. I think I shared this a few weeks ago, that as we began to talk about Passover for Life Assembly, we actually had 3 different Passovers last night. But our son Daniel and his wife Catesby, they have a new house, new mobile home. And so they wanted to have Passover at their house. And we were outnumbered by children last night, as it is normal with Life Assembly, that we're outnumbered, which is a wonderful thing. We had five adults. Let's see, 6 adults. Yeah, 6 adults and 7 children that were there, if my memory serves me right. And we had a beautiful Passover together. But what I wasn't expecting is that along the way of planning, that Daniel would come to me and say, by the way, it's at my house and I'm leading it. And at first I went, okay, that's fine. And then I began to figure out, wait a minute, that means I'm not. You know, if he's leading it, that means I'm not leading it. And it was really the next morning when I was going through my morning routine that I heard these. It's one thing when you listen to my teachings and tell me something, and you send me a text, Dorothy, thank you, Dorothy and Mike. You send me emails, various people that do, or write a short letter. Let me know something that I said that was meaningful to you. I appreciate that, but it's quite another thing when I have to listen to my own teachings. And something I've been teaching for a number of years now is a rising generation. And so I was going through, as I said, my morning routine, and all of a sudden I heard these words. As I was almost getting offended that, like, Daniel hadn't asked me, he just made a statement. He came back later and talked to me about that. But I heard these words, rising generation, that means you got to get out of the way. Oh, yeah, that stung. It stung. But, you know, in the end, I'm all for it. Watching these young people, as I'm just honored to be a part of their growth, watching them enter into leadership positions, watching them, as I do with Life on Purpose every week with Daniel, Ryan, and David, watching them enter into this beautiful place of their own growth is beyond words. So Daniel and I talked about our Passover a little bit, and he wanted to honor some of the traditions that I've put in place through the years, but wanted to do something that was personal, was his. And we talked about that. Of course, we had lamb last night, which I don't really like lamb very much, but Kathy makes a beautiful lamb for Passover, so we had lamb. I know the thoughts that that Judah has, that the Jewish people have regarding not having lamb. Many do not have lamb because there's no temple. My thought is that there was no temple in Egypt either. So, you know, I look at it, and we have lamb at our Passover table. We had the bitter herbs. We had a choice for the children of the horseradish or some parsley. And interesting enough, our granddaughter, she loved the horseradish. And it was hot, too. But we had the horseradish. We had matzah, of course, and some wonderful matzah ball soup. We had our shoes. At least everybody had shoes at least either on or close to their feet. We had our staffs either in our hand or close and within grabbing distance. We ate in haste. Why? Because it was really good. Mary did a wonderful job on the matzo ball soup, and Sarah and various, everybody came together and just had a beautiful meal that we ate very fast because it was so good. But the ending that we came to, me and Daniel came to, was this, that Passover is about telling the story. And so what is the story? Is the story the Passover from the Exodus of Egypt? Yes. But is that all of the story? Are we truly telling the story if we only tell the story of the Exodus from Egypt? Or if we tell the story of the Exodus from Egypt but do not tell what I would refer to as the rest of the story, is it like opening one chapter of a book, reading that chapter, and saying that we've read the whole book? So with that, Daniel wrote on his notes, it says, the story. So I'd like to share with you, I told Daniel last night that the first time that I do this, I'm going to give him credit. So this time, I'm giving credit. The next time I read it, it's going to be a relative told me, and the third time it's mine. So I'd like to share with you today what Daniel has written out regarding the story of Passover. It started with a word. He spoke and everything came into being. Pure words, pure sound, directed from the Ancient of Days, the Most Holy One. In 7 days he created perfection. Not a blemish to be found, not a single thing could have been better than it was. Creator and creation dwelled together in harmony. Then an evil word, as impure as the Creator's word was pure, entered into that perfection. It was a slow poison, grasping for every foothold, choking every inch it was allowed. It spread and spread until it claimed its victim. the fall, the sin. Through one man's disobedience, darkness was let into light. The Creator who had dwelt with creation now had to slay creation. The once untainted earth had its first taste of blood. As the Creator looked upon the death that was to be a covering for sins, He knew that the same would have to be done on a bigger scale, but it would take time. Sin took its hold on the earth. So great was its hold that the whole earth was to be cleansed with water. The obedience of one man saved a remnant. The years went by slowly until a man named Abram heard a voice. The obedience of one man set another stone on the road of covenant. But for the promise of a people and a land, once again, the Creator stepped in and shed the blood of creation to ratify that promise. More years went by, and the people of God found themselves enslaved in exile. The Hebrews served the Egyptians under the bitter rule of slavery. But the obedience of one man would again set a stone on the road of covenant. Moses led the Hebrews out of Egypt under the mighty hand of God. Through frogs and lice, hail and locusts, darkness and even death, God faithfully watched over His people. But yet again, to escape the death that passed over, the innocent blood of a lamb had to be shed. The earth groaned. The promise of a people and a land was coming to pass. From Egypt to the wilderness, and now from the wilderness to the land, Moses passed the leadership of God's people to Joshua. But to purge the land that had been promised to Abraham, many wars were fought, and many shed their blood. The earth groaned louder. Slowly the land was purged. Judges came and went. The people rebelled and repented, rebelled and repented, rebelled and repented. The people of God now cried out for a human king. They were no longer satisfied with God as their king, but God in His great mercy chose a man after His own heart. David, a shepherd, a warrior, a worshiper. The only man to earn the title as one after God's own heart. Yet still sin crouched at his door. A man as great as he, yet the blood of thousands was on his hands. But the plan of God remained. From David's tree a branch would emerge, having from him the fullness of God's Spirit. From the time of the wilderness to 4 BCE, millions and millions of lambs were slain. Millions of spotless lambs gave their blood as a temporary covering until, behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. Redemption, true redemption was at hand. The Messiah, the Son of Man, the Son of God, the Holy One had come down to put an end to it all. He lived His life with perfect obedience to His Father, perfect oneness. He spent His days living, loving, healing, exposing, guiding, shepherding, obeying, listening, teaching, forgiving, and redeeming. Not a single sin would be found in Him. Not a single spot or blemish. The garden had returned as a human, yet not entirely human. His very essence was fulfillment. His very existence was fulfillment. His presence caused people to love Him or hate Him. The will of the Father led Him to be led away. The will of the Father led Him to be led away as a criminal. The full wrath of God was to be poured out on Him. The full weight of every sin for all time. Too much for a man to bear, yet for the joy set before Him. The joy of you and I at this table.
Jerusalem, how I long for you to gaze at your walls.
Shabbat shalom, and for those of you that sent whatever it was, birthday wishes, greetings, prayers, whatever, what do we do these days? I don't know. Thank you so much. Yes, I have officially entered into the Medicare eligible range now. So, but I, as my daughter said, I refuse to grow up. So, for those of you that are, that share with me that Medicare eligible, that's only in physical sense, and mentally, no, I'm not going there. But yeah, celebrated birthday yesterday, which was, of course, coming up on Passover. And that's why I'm doing something a little different this week. I had to, with Passover this week, I had to change recordings to Tuesday. So yesterday I decided that, I just thought I'm not going to do a recording today. Not just because it's my birthday and I want to take the day off, but because it was coming up on Passover, and it was then evident last night. Why? Because I have something, I think, very special to share with you today, coming up into this Passover season. A couple things regarding Passover. Remember, that Passover is not just a moment in time, but Passover is a season. And it is said that we have not truly entered into Passover and observed Passover until we have observed Shavuot. And those two, those are two of the three biblical festivals that were, Passover, Shavuot, Sukkot, Feast of Tabernacles. That's the three big ones. But so this is all about our redemption. And then out of that redemption, we really are not truly redeemed until we come to the place of the message of Shavuot, Pentecost, and we receive their instructions into our lives that are going to give us a new way of life and therefore keep us from going back into bondage. It's been exciting to watch on Facebook the last few days, and of course this morning also, as the posts have come out from people all over the country, around the world, that are celebrating Passover. I remember the days in which it was like, one or two people here and there. And to just see all the Passover services that are going on is amazing. I'll get to that in just a moment. Before I do, though, I will be, Bezrat Hashem, God willing, I'll be in Wilkesboro, North Carolina, this Shabbat, working with Exodus Road Band, my brother Rico Cortez. I can't remember his name. He has been working with the Red Heifers in Israel. Looking forward to meeting him and spending some time. And my son Daniel is going to be up there just for the, I believe, the afternoon evening on Shabbat. And so if you're anywhere around Wilkesboro, North Carolina, please come and see us. Rico, I will be speaking to the adults one time. I'm going to be doing more of the young adult youth sessions because I'm not old enough actually to be in the adult section. I'm still over in my mind, guys. At Thanksgiving, I'm still sitting at the children's table, okay? And I'm very happy at the children's table because that's where all the fun is. So if you're anywhere around there, if you need information on that, please send me an email. I'd be glad to send that to you. The Passovers, seeing the pictures was wonderful. I figured out last night, I don't know how, a miracle happened at our Passover last night in that there wasn't a single picture taken. I don't know how we possibly got through the whole evening, but nobody took out a phone, nobody took out a camera, and nobody took a picture that I know of, and I'm okay with that. But there was pictures all over Facebook of some that were large, some that were small, some that were elaborate, some that were simple. Anywhere between all of that, but just to see the number of people. I know folks that have been have had churches reach out to them in the last few months that knew that they observed Passover, and churches that have been saying, we're kind of rethinking some things of, how do you get 3 days and three nights between Friday and Sunday? Was he really resurrected on Sunday? Is there some issues here? And so there's a lot of people that are waking up to this amazing revelation. In fact, I think it's wonderful this year in that the days of the week actually correspond to the same time that it was in 2,000 years ago at the time of Yeshua. And this would correspond, I guess, maybe to the same as it was in the days of Egypt. I don't know, but you know, last Shabbat was the 10th of Nisan, a Torah congregation. It was on that day that they brought the lamb into the house to be examined. As it was in the days of Yeshua, it was on Shabbat. Interesting enough. Messiah being our Shabbat, our rest in redemption, he was brought into Jerusalem, and it was Shabbat that he began to reveal himself. It was in those days that he was questioned. It would have been on Wednesday night that he was placed upon an execution stake. And these days that we're into right now, between now and the end of Shabbat, the scripture never says that he was raised on Sunday morning. It says the women went to the tomb on Sunday morning. Why? Because, you know, it was Shabbat, for one thing, and you wouldn't have traveled. And you wouldn't have traveled at night. They would not have been able to travel to the tomb until after Shabbat was over, and it's kind of dark out. And so they would have waited till the next morning. So this year, everything lines up on our Gregorian calendar, the best of our knowledge, the same as it was in the days of Yeshua. And I wonder if maybe it was the same in the days of Egypt. I don't know. A new thought for me this year is funny. You know, I've been celebrating Passover since 1997. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. And this is just this video this week is just me kind of sharing some personal things, and I hope it speaks to you. But I wondered this year. I've taught for a number of years that the first Passover was in the garden, and so when the Almighty slayed the animal, that was a day that would later be referred to as Passover. So I wonder if he came to them on the 10th of Nisan in the garden and began to question them and to talk to them about, we get this idea that things just happen, you know, like one after another, that this moment, and now the story's done. But did this happen over time? Did he come to them on the 10th of Nisan, begin to explain to them what they had done? Was the lamb slain, or the animal slain on the evening of the 14th? Did he take that skins, and it take 50 days during what we would see as the count of the Omer until the days of Shavuot? And we see in Bereshit, Genesis chapter 3, when he brought the skins, he brought life into the skins and gave it to them. Is this all the biblical pattern that happens over and over and over again? As Hulis Allwine says, it's not that prophecy happens. We shouldn't be saying, is prophecy happening? But how many times has this now been fulfilled? How many times are we on the time in which we're seeing it fulfilled again and again and again until there will be one day a final fulfillment of these prophecies? It's that cycle that we go through. And so to see this happen and other new people coming into this has been amazing. I was remembering back to, it was 1997. I was pastoring this Southern Baptist Charismatic Pentecostal with very slightly messianic leanings. I had not even been to Israel yet. I don't know if I knew what the word Torah meant. I sure couldn't have explained it to anybody. I was probably still teaching a little replacement theology in those days, and was invited to go to a Passover Seder in Tallahassee, Florida. So myself, Kathy, a number of us from the church there, we went to Tallahassee, And it was quite an event. You gotta understand that where I was pastoring in in Spring Creek, it's a long ways from the city, and it's a long ways from city folks. And so we walked into this banquet room, and you talk about elegant. It was elegant to the max. I'm totally uncomfortable in places like that. It was one of those that there's probably 200 or 300 people there, and they've got these round tables, which they, something about that, they have a table that seats 6, and you've got to put 8 to 10 at the table. And so it's like this claustrophobic thing that I don't do real well. And then there's 5 or 6 forks at the plates, at the plate setting. I'm a very simple person. I only need one fork. It doesn't matter if it's salad, appetizer, the green beans, or dessert. I only use one kind of fork. It just fits real well. And I'm having to look around and go, okay, which fork am I supposed to use for this? And it's really uncomfortable. It's one of these very long seders that took hours and hours. And I'm looking around like, okay, I know there's something here, but I think that there's something that I'm kind of missing. But that did pique an interest to look at this a little bit more. And I remember going to another Seder the next year and then eventually would begin to lead the Seders. And over the last however many years it's been from 97 till now, I've probably attended over 20 Seders, well over 20 Seders. I've led most of them. And as I look back at the Seders that we've done, I was in Belgium in 2005, led a Seder. It was that we knew of. It was the first time that there had been a group of people that were just new to, in those days, Hebrew roots, Messianic, Torah was very new to the area of Antwerpen. There was congregation springing up, but there were few and far between. And so I was able to lead. There's over 100 people that came together in Antwerpen that night. And, we led what we think was the first community Passover that was based on the person of Messiah. We did a Passover in Oklahoma that I dressed up as Moses. That was a blast. Did one down in Clayton, Georgia that did the same thing. That's always, you know, always fun. We've done small Passovers. One year it was just Kathy and I. We've done large Passovers, each one of them having great meaning. But this year's Passover was, let me tell you, just totally different. I think I shared this a few weeks ago, that as we began to talk about Passover for Life Assembly, we actually had 3 different Passovers last night. But our son Daniel and his wife Catesby, they have a new house, new mobile home. And so they wanted to have Passover at their house. And we were outnumbered by children last night, as it is normal with Life Assembly, that we're outnumbered, which is a wonderful thing. We had five adults. Let's see, 6 adults. Yeah, 6 adults and 7 children that were there, if my memory serves me right. And we had a beautiful Passover together. But what I wasn't expecting is that along the way of planning, that Daniel would come to me and say, by the way, it's at my house and I'm leading it. And at first I went, okay, that's fine. And then I began to figure out, wait a minute, that means I'm not. You know, if he's leading it, that means I'm not leading it. And it was really the next morning when I was going through my morning routine that I heard these. It's one thing when you listen to my teachings and tell me something, and you know, you send me a text, Dorothy, thank you, Dorothy and Mike. You send me emails, various people that do, or write a short letter. Let me know something that I said that was meaningful to you. I appreciate that. But it's quite another thing when I have to listen to my own teachings. And something I've been teaching for a number of years now is a rising generation. And so I was going through, as I said, my morning routine, and all of a sudden I heard these words. As I was almost getting offended that, like, Daniel hadn't asked me, he just made a statement. He came back later and talked to me about that. But I heard these words, rising generation, that means you got to get out of the way. Oh, yeah, that stung. It stung, but, you know, in the end, I'm all for it. Watching these young people, as I'm just honored to be a part of their growth, watching them enter into leadership positions, watching them as I do with Life on Purpose every week with Daniel, Ryan, and David, watching them enter into this beautiful place of their own growth is beyond words. So Daniel and I talked about our Passover a little bit, and he wanted to honor some of the traditions that I've put in place through the years, but wanted to do something that was personal, was his. And we talked about that. Of course, we had lamb last night, which I don't really like lamb very much, but Kathy makes a beautiful lamb for Passover, so we had lamb. I know the thoughts that that Judah has, that the Jewish people have regarding not having lamb. Many do not have lamb because there's no temple. My thought is that there was no temple in Egypt either. So, you know, I look at it, and we have lamb at our Passover table. We had the bitter herbs. We had a choice for the children of the horseradish or some parsley. And interesting enough, our granddaughter, she loved the horseradish. And it was hot, too. But we had the horseradish. We had matzah, of course, and some wonderful matzah ball soup. We had our shoes, at least everybody had shoes at least either on or close to their feet. We had our staffs either in our hand or close and within grabbing distance. We ate in haste. Why? Because it was really good. Mary, you did a wonderful job on the matzo ball soup, and Sarah and various, everybody came together and just had a beautiful meal that we ate very fast because it was so good. But the ending that we came to, me and Daniel came to, was this, that Passover is about telling the story. And so what is the story? Is the story the Passover from the Exodus of Egypt? Yes. But is that all of the story? Are we truly telling the story if we only tell the story of the Exodus from Egypt? Or if we tell the story of the Exodus from Egypt, but do not tell what I would refer to as the rest of the story, is it like opening one chapter of a book, reading that chapter, and saying that we've read the whole book? So with that, Daniel wrote on his notes, it says, the story. So I'd like to share with you, I told Daniel last night that the first time that I do this, I'm going to give him credit. So this time, I'm giving credit. The next time I read it, it's going to be a relative told me, and the third time it's mine. So I'd like to share with you today what Daniel has written out regarding the story of Passover. It started with a word. He spoke and everything came into being. Pure words, pure sound, directed from the Ancient of Days, the Most Holy One. In 7 days he created perfection. Not a blemish to be found, not a single thing could have been better than it was. Creator and creation dwelled together in harmony. Then an evil word, as impure as the Creator's word was pure, entered into that perfection. It was a slow poison, grasping for every foothold, choking every inch it was allowed. It spread and spread until it claimed its victim, the fall, the sin. Through one man's disobedience, darkness was let into light. The Creator who had dwelt with creation now had to slay creation. The once untainted earth had its first taste of blood. As the Creator looked upon the death that was to be a covering for sins, he knew that the same would have to be done on a bigger scale, but it would take time. Sin took its hold on the earth. So great was its hold that the whole earth was to be cleansed with water. The obedience of one man saved a remnant. The years went by slowly until a man named Abram heard a voice. The obedience of one man set another stone on the road of covenant. But for the promise of a people and a land, once again, the Creator stepped in and shed the blood of creation to ratify that promise. More years went by, and the people of God found themselves enslaved in exile. The Hebrews served the Egyptians under the bitter rule of slavery. But the obedience of one man would again set a stone on the road of covenant. Moses led the Hebrews out of Egypt under the mighty hand of God. Through frogs and lice, hail and locusts, darkness and even death, God faithfully watched over his people. But yet again, to escape the death that passed over, the innocent blood of a lamb had to be shed. The earth groaned. The promise of a people and a land was coming to pass. From Egypt to the wilderness, and now from the wilderness to the land, Moses passed the leadership of God's people to Joshua. But to purge the land that had been promised to Abraham, many wars were fought, and many shed their blood. The earth groaned louder. Slowly the land was purged. Judges came and went. The people rebelled and repented, rebelled and repented, rebelled and repented. The people of God now cried out for a human king. They were no longer satisfied with God as their king, but God in his great mercy chose a man after his own heart. David, a shepherd, a warrior, a worshiper. The only man to earn the title as one after God's own heart, yet still sin crouched at his door. A man as great as he, yet the blood of thousands was on his hands. But the plan of God remained. From David's tree a branch would emerge, having from him the fullness of God's Spirit. From the time of the wilderness to 4 BCE, millions and millions of lambs were slain. Millions of spotless lambs gave their blood as a temporary covering until, behold the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world. Redemption, true redemption was at hand. The Messiah, the Son of Man, the Son of God, the Holy One had come down to put an end to it all. He lived his life with perfect obedience to his Father, perfect oneness. He spent his days living, loving, healing, exposing, guiding, shepherding, obeying, listening, teaching, forgiving, and redeeming. Not a single sin would be found in him, not a single spot or blemish. The garden had returned as a human, yet not entirely human. His very essence was fulfillment. His very existence was fulfillment. His presence caused people to love him or hate him. The will of the Father led him to be led away. The will of the Father led him to be led away as a criminal. The full wrath of God was to be poured out on him. The full weight of every sin for all time. Too much for a man to bear, yet for the joy set before him. The joy of you and I at this table.